you know, we look at things, you know, and we're beginning to look at things such as, you know, ICU days. You know, if someone gets sick, because inevitably people have, you know, have issues with their chronic disease, or they have a catastrophic event that occurs that is unforeseen. But, you know, the healthier I feel like these folks are going into it, the less of this utilization. Plus, if you look at the post-acute, you know, episode, you know, right. You know, a lot of folks are being funneled into, for better or worse, into post-acute care facilities, inpatient facilities. And, you know, one of the things we objectively are trying to do is reduce that utilization, but establish a comprehensive care management in the home, which is nickels, if not pennies, on the dollar.
This episode of Vital Conversations is produced and distributed by Be Connected, a social media management firm in Northeast Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Tim Cohen from Focus Solutions, and welcome to Vital Conversations, where we talk with leaders in the healthcare industry about what's happening in their business, their practice, and specifically how the role of IT and data are important to their business. I'm honored today to have as my guest Dr. Chris Chumley from Dallas, Texas. Chris is with Meridian Health. Chris, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Tim. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Meridian plays in a really interesting spot in primary care. Tell us a little bit about you guys and what's unique about Meridian.
Sure. Tim, we our practice in Dallas, and really extends throughout Dallas-Fort Worth, provide home-based medicine to at-risk seniors. And, you know, part of that is goes back to the beginning of medicine with house calls. And we've been working with a lot of other folks in this industry to modernize that process and to expand upon it. And so we're able to provide care for these at-risk seniors at their place of living, whether it be independent living facility or a domicile like an assisted living facility.
Okay. You say at-risk seniors. Are you guys predominantly in value-based care arrangements, fee-for-service, or some combination of the two, or maybe a third kind of arrangement completely unique and different?
All of the above. And I think, you know, as everyone transitions from fee-for-service, I think home-based medicine in general is in a very advantageous spot, Tim. I think that one of the advantages we provide is to address, you know, the most complex patients in that continuum, in the healthcare continuum.
When we talk about complex patients, particularly in the senior population, that generally means lots of chronic diseases. Tell me a little bit about what a typical complex patient might look like that you would see, and it's probably not typical in your day. A little bit of, give us a sense of just how complicated complex is.
Sure. You know, the phrase in healthcare that most folks in this industry know is the 5% costing 50%, right?
Right.
And really what we're trying to do is address that 5%.
Okay.
About 14% of Medicare beneficiaries have six or more chronic conditions.
Right.
That encompasses the vast majority of our practice. We are, okay, you know, predominantly addressing that specific cohort.
Okay. And you are working as their primary care physician to truly manage that, as opposed to an episodic, and we need to call a doctor in because somebody fell. Yes. You really are longitudinal in that regard.
Yes, predominantly yes, but I will. There's a caveat there, Tim, because we, you know, the vast majority of our patients, we are their primary care physician. I think one of the advantages we offer, again, is that we, seeing them at their place of care, place of living, are able to really intervene on a different level, I think, than your traditional brick and mortar clinic.
Right. Now, you said you had all kinds of reimbursement arrangements. Let's take Medicare Advantage, for example. Are you guys carrying the contract directly? Are you partnered with somebody else, whether it's a plan or another delegated ACO?
A little bit of both. I mean, we again are looking for, and we're in the process again of developing these strategic relationships, whether it's, okay, with an ACO, because, you know, really when you look at how many players are in this niche at this,
right,
moment, it's still,
right,
relatively small. You know, the vast majority of your folks are still going to be going to brick and mortar clinics. So, you know, I think the goal for us is to provide outcomes-based, you know, evidence that we can show that we really help this particular cohort.
I would assume that one of the major differences on your model, where you go to the patient as opposed to the patient comes to the doctor, is you can have better compliance in terms of the regularity of visits that their disease state might suggest is necessary versus if you got to come to your office, do I have transportation? Can I get there? Does that change the frequency with which you get to intervene with the patient?
It does. I think there's really three levels, I'll briefly go through those, where I think that the differential between your traditional brick and mortar and our model for this population. I do think the first is that the amount of time we have per visit is multiples larger. I mean, I think, you know, when you're looking at seeing 30 folks a day in a clinic versus our average visit's about 45 minutes.
Okay. All right.
Face to face. That's not including anything else. So when you're the second level is where you see the folks in their home, you get a true sense of what, you know, what is going on. I think that's most extreme in a private residence when you're actually in someone's home. But even to a degree of like an assisted living facility, which has an infrastructure in place, you can still, you know, manage these folks right then and there. You're not relying on them to come to you to a clinic to bring a bag of medications that you have to go through with your, you know, 8-minute visit that you have. Right. So
you can go to the medicine cabinet with them and say, like, let's get them all and make sure.
Yeah, Tim, one of my favorite things to do is a fridge biopsy. You know, I go through.
Interesting.
I go through the refrigerator. You know, you have these heart failure folks that, you know, they keep going to the hospital with heart failure. You know, pot pie, frozen dinner. You know, So just simple things like that actually make huge, I think, leaps in terms of just the controlling these chronic diseases that put these folks at risk in the first place. And then I'll just mention briefly the third aspect, I think, is just the personalization. You really get to know someone on their turf. You really get that, I think, in some ways, a stronger bond as a clinician and a patient in that specific arena.
Fridge biopsy might be my new favorite healthcare term, though I'm not sure I want you doing a biopsy.
Yeah, there's some fridges you kind of regret going into, but
it raises a great point just about this extra layer of diagnostic information that you see that never comes up in a traditional brick and mortar visit, right? From the home situation to safety, fall risks to again, what's in the fridge. Don't look at the ice cream that's hiding back there.
Well, Tim, when you look like why folks in this cohort fail, and what is failure? I mean, let's just say hospitalization rate, emergency room utilization is basic things, because that's what everyone looks at, right? And that's what drives cost. But you know, looking, you know, having this dynamic where you're there, I think can directly influence that, and thus kind of, you know, lowering the cost on these folks. And developing an outcome that is, I think, beneficial for them and for the system.
When we talk about outcomes, and we've been talking about this now as an industry for a long time, you could argue maybe we've made good progress. I'm sure many people are frustrated by the lack of progress over the last 20 years. What are some of the outcomes that you look at that are most important in your mind that you're trying to move the needle on in terms of both quality of life for your patients as well as cost to the system?
I think that in some ways we miss the forest from the trees sometimes, you know, with what are outcomes, right? What are we trying? What is our end goal? And, you know, I think if we break it down a very simple place, if we were able to let people age in place and avoid the utilization of these ER visits as much as we can, then that's great. But further, more nuanced is, when someone goes to the emergency room, you know, we look at things, you know, and we're beginning to look at things such as, you know, ICU days. You know, if someone gets sick, because inevitably people have, you know, have issues with their chronic disease, or they have a catastrophic event that occurs that is unforeseen. But, you know, the healthier I feel like these folks are going into it, the less of this utilization. Plus, if you look at the post-acute, you know, episode, you know, you know, a lot of folks are being funneled into, for better or worse, into post-acute care facilities, inpatient facilities. Okay. And, you know, one of the things we objectively are trying to do is reduce that utilization, but establish a comprehensive care management in the home which is nickels, if not pennies on the dollar, and able to provide these interventions within 48, 72 hours, as opposed to waiting for the folks to come to the clinic.
Yeah, the home is subacute may be less expensive than a bed day, which is less expensive than an ICU day. What is the current rough mix for Meridian on patients that you see in home versus a facility, whether assisted living, nursing home, wherever else you might find them, right, in your home versus facility?
Within Meridian, currently, we are predominantly facility-based. In my former solo practice, I did quite a bit of home visits. I enjoyed it thoroughly, but this is where the economics of medicine is at the moment. And, again, the switch for us from fee-for-service to shared savings models is so important because, on average, we're seeing, I mentioned that 45-minute, we're looking at seeing 10 patients a day. Now, right. If we have to use some FedEx logic and logistics, if I have to drive to 10 homes versus if I go to a facility and send 10 patients, clearly that's going to be more doable. But I think what we're going to want to do in the long run is expand this in the community, go from the concentrated to the less concentrated and frankly, the less served, underserved areas, more underserved areas, in our county.
And would it be a fair assumption to say that as more of these patients are covered in more of a value-based model, the easier it will be to be in the home to make those economics work as opposed to having to concentrate in facilities for provider windshield time?
Sure. I think it goes to the basics of volume versus outcomes based, right? We're making this transition as a lot of people are, and really fee for service is probably going the way of the dodo bird, right? I mean, your people are either going to be in an MA plan that is comprehensive, or they're going to be in the REACH or shared savings models that our care is developing.
Yeah, the economics, again, on that, if you do the math on the 5% cost 50, which is my favorite statistic to share with people outside the industry, you get to a really, really expensive per person spend on those 16 to 20 million really, really sick people. So, yeah, you don't have to move that needle a lot to rethink how you could reimburse people like Meridian to help change the spend there.
Yeah, and the data has been pretty universally positive, regardless of the region, regardless of the setting, so to speak, but within all home-based, all external from the clinics. But you're looking at typically in a well-run program could cut that that hospitalization, that probably preventable rate by about a third. And, when you're looking at ER days or less, when you're looking at all across the board, it's decreased. I think the rate limiting step for us right now, again, is to untether us from this existing traditional, clinic-based kind of primary care model.
I want to pivot to some of the technological and data challenges. You mentioned the house call. So those of us that are old enough to remember Marcus Welby, the doctor showed up with a little black bag that had a stethoscope and a hammer for your knee. I am guessing that, one, you have a little black bag. It might be more of a backpack, but you probably have some technological tools in that bag that Marcus Welby didn't. Let's talk, first of all, about just the infrastructure, access, Wi-Fi, the cloud. I mean, you're not in your office. You're in somebody's home. You're in somebody's assisted living center. Let's talk first of all about how are you solving for the fundamental IT infrastructure side of this before we get to the data.
Well, I mean, and there's been quite a bit of innovation in space. And fortunately for us, that, that's coincided with just our ability to do our to play out this mission. I mean, I think if you look back, obviously, look, I'll go back to the 19th century. I mean, medical care was delivered in the home, predominantly 90%+. And then by 1980, it was 1%. And I think this all began in really about 98, CMS started to regenerate these codes for home-based care. And then you fast forward to 2009 with the high-tech implementation. But really for me, and I started right around that 2008, 2009 period doing home visits. And let me tell you, it was, it was the frontier. It was the Wild West. So the cloud was, I think, for us, the initial step, that really accelerated what we were able to provide.
Okay. So the cloud really was a game changer because you could walk in now and with access. I assume, most of the time you've either got Wi-Fi or, reliable cellular that will let you.
Yeah. Again, 5G. Yeah. Now I'm mostly cellular. Before it was Wi-Fi, but granted, if you're out in a rural area and you remember my patient population, most of these folks still don't have internet. It's you were reliant on either finding a Starbucks nearby or, to do your notes or to download what you needed, or, hopefully they had some sort of connection. But no, now with 5G and even with potentially Starlink for the rural area, we'll have more and more access to our applications. Yeah.
All right. Interesting. All right. So that's the operations side. Let's talk about the unique data challenges you have on everything from moving data in and out just in the course of you as a physician need information, you're generating information that you're passed on to somebody else. So you got all that change. And then we'll work our way to the data that you really want, right? Which is the analytics and the capability to move the needle. Talk first of all, just about some of the plumbing challenges as you're moving stuff to and from you as you're out and about.
Sure. Well, and again, because we are a niche model, most EMR suites and even the ancillary stuff is devised for clinic-based, traditional models. And so we've had to more or less bolt on things along the way. And we are finding more and more inclusive type of suites though for us, but just that operation, that making that visit happen. And really our goal, Tim, at the end of the day is to replicate a clinic visit inside someone's home. And we feasibly can do that for the most part. And in real time, if we need to order an x-ray, I can order an x-ray, have it out there within an hour and read it within, do an initial read within 30 minutes after that. So, when you have that kind of turnover and you're evaluating, we talked about the primary care aspect, but we also do, and we're going to hopefully expand more into doing not necessarily urgent care, but stuff like post-hospitalization where there is a time component.
Interesting question. As integrated delivery systems have grown and more primary care physicians are now formally employed and attached to a system, they're probably more of their patients are a one-to-one exchange, right? From their office to that instance of Epic or Cerner or whatever it is. You've got patients probably going, when they go to the hospital, they're going all over the place. How are you guys managing the fact that you are pulling data from those hospital visits and pushing data back in a many to many kind of situation?
Sure. It's a challenge, as you alluded to, in Dallas, Fort Worth, you're looking at, there's five or even six, if you count the university systems. And so when you have patients in all over town, some prefer this hospital A, some prefer hospital system B. And so then where, can we collaborate with all of them? Yes and no. There are some, fortunately, patient ping, I believe is one, but, that allow you to, collate this data from specifically things from hospitalizations that are they're high risk things for us and do that. So yeah, we're always looking for new ways to integrate those kind of things.
The bigger than a individual delivery system interoperability questions are very real for you guys, right? That idea that we break those boundaries down and data flows, you guys are a direct use case of why we need that. Yeah. Let's talk about then that, okay, so the data that you were trying to look at, not only in caring for an individual patient, but maybe things that you all are looking at more broadly to move the needle on these patients. Tell me what kinds of data you're getting around outcomes, where you are, where you would like to go over the course of the next couple of years on the data to use in the business.
Sure. And I think defining those metrics for us is important. We do look at basic things like a RAF score, because we want to know, who our patients are and define and then really work to see, who needs us. And so defining complexity in a patient, and, you know, I look at us as complexivist, you know, that's kind of our role. We serve the really complex patient populations. But we need to define who they are first. And then from there, the outcomes, as you asked about, was, you know, I look at cost as being one. Now, cost doesn't always translate to, you know, the bottom line for a patient. But again, yeah, if we're going to grow this model, we need to show is a litmus test for viability on a scalable, you know, level. And right. So, you know, we want to know what the costs are. We also want to know, you know, again, things like hospital days. We also want to know things like ICU days. We also want to know our bounce back rates, meaning when, if a patient leaves the hospital, are they going back? And I think as you get more and more to that sort of thing, it does translate directly to patient well-being, patient safety and outcomes on that level.
Yeah. Let me, as we start to wrap up, let me use the old baseball analogy and ask you, on that data, what inning do you think we are in as an industry on having everything that you just mentioned, from ER days to, you know, other kinds of things? Where are we in the journey?
Well, I think the first inning was we went through a bunch of relief pitchers. You know, we were that first inning was rough for both teams, right? Once the ball has been rolling here, I think I would say we're probably in the fourth inning, and I say that we're not halfway through the game; we're just beginning that, because I think there's still several hurdles that are we need. You know, there needs to be more clarification on from CMS in terms of, you know, what is going to be the ultimate payer source of how these folks are paid. You know, can these avenues for shared savings be not just for the large, you know, conglomerates of the world, but for small practices like us and medium-sized practices? And then from there, it's, you know, how can we innovate from the patient care side? And I think there's so much more room for innovation. You look at things like hospital at home, which we're not doing at the moment, but I find personally intriguing. You know, for a lot of folks, you know, I just could use someone with advanced dementia. Do they need to be hospitalized every time they have a urinary tract infection? Can we treat them in the home safely and effectively? Which I think would, again, be a win-win-win. Win for the patient, win for us as clinicians, win for the system. And that's really ultimately what we want.
Awesome. Dr. Chris Chumley, thank you. Thanks for not only sharing your story today, but this industry is hard and it's complicated, especially for that 5% of the patients. We need people out there that are trying to innovate. We haven't cracked the code yet, so we need people coming up with visions and ideas and rolling up their sleeves and trying. And so we are thrilled to get a chance to listen in on the Meridian story. We'll be watching. Best of luck to you guys. Thanks again for being with
us. Tim, thank you so much again for giving us this platform. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Chris, have a great day. Thank you.
You too.
Vital Conversations is presented by Focus Solutions. Focus provides integrated IT data and software services to physician practices all across the United States. To hear more stories about physician practice leaders and what they are doing, subscribe to Vital Conversations wherever you get your podcasts.